The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Film Show. We're back, poorly shaved, crudely tattooed, and ready to take you on a joyride to a world of handsome crooks, daring bank robberies, and insane motorbike stunts. This is a place where nothing happens in isolation. Every action has a consequence, and everything we say will echo down the ages. Or at least the next 20 minutes. Coming up on this week's show, The Last Man on Earth looks battered, confused, and much like Tom Cruise, in oblivion. The former heads of Israel's security agency reveal all in the Oscar-nominated documentary The Gatekeepers. And an American in Paris goes complètement fou in indie thriller Simon Killer. Let's kick off our sprawling epic with Derek Sion France's The Place Beyond the Pines. It's a transgenerational crime drama in which Bradley Cooper and Ryan Gosling play cops and robbers across the state of New York with scant regard for what all this macho posturing is going to do to their kids. There's booze and guns, betrayal and ambition, but won't somebody please think of the children?
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Luke and the Heartthrob.
Who's that guy?
He's yours.
You're not going to tell me?
He just took off. How are you going to take care of him?
The Place Beyond the Pines delivers a morality tale in three acts. Ryan Gosling plays Luke Glanton, a brooding stunt biker who's Woody the Mendez and is supporting their infant son by pulling bank robberies. Bradley Cooper is the dutiful cop ready to take him down. And then, a generation later, their sons forge a friendship in the shadows of their fathers.
I'm not going to let you bring us down. If you ride like lightning, you're going to crash like thunder.
Joining me now to take their spin in the cage of death is Peter Mad Dog Bradshaw and Catherine Knife-Edge Short. Peter, Derek Sion France worked with Ryan Gosling before on Blue Valentine, but there's a bit more rev to this.
There's a huge amount more rev. I found that this reminded me very much of a Dennis Lehane kind of thriller, but I enjoyed it and admired it much more than any Dennis Lehane movie I've seen, I must say. I thought this was very engaging, very involving. I think it's Ryan Gosling's kind of his best performance in a long while. I think he was doing something more than the sort of sleepy-eyed, woozy face that he usually does. I liked it very much. I liked it very much. I thought there was something quite interesting and rather daring in this way it's structured, at least in the beginning, of just showing us first Ryan Gosling's character and then shifting the focus round to Bradley Cooper's cop without showing the way in which they're integrated. And I thought that was really interesting, that kind of diptych effect. So, yeah, I was gripped by it.
Catherine Peters saying this is Gosling's best performance. There is some kind of parallels here with Drive, which is a performance a lot of people know him for, right?
I think that's right. And I mean, actually, when he first... I've seen this twice now, and the first time I saw it, my sort of expectations were such fever pitch. And also, you can't help but compare it to Drive through a lot of it because he's this sort of amazing stunt driver and he's quite... doesn't say much. And he's Gozzle, you know.
He's got a trendy jacket.
Trendy jacket.
Mechanic mate.
It's true. Yeah,
there's a lot of parallels.
So much of. But I think once those expectations are sort of changed and you relax into it, it really does sort of develop and grow on you and really lingers with you. For me, that last part was again, it's when their grown-up sons are sort of meeting. It was slightly strange. I mean, you know, Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes's son, as a baby, is played very nicely by Anthony Pizza, the upcoming actor. It's actually called.
He was great.
He was really good. But then as an older boy, he's, you know, you'd think if your dad's Ryan Gosling and your mum's Eva Mendes, you'd be just the best-looking person ever. And the guy who plays him, good-looking, but sort of strange and weedy-looking. Whereas Bradley Cooper and Rose Byrne's kid is this ridiculously sort of street kind of rapper guy, and no explanation of how he became quite so rappy. Anyway, lots of sort of issues, but the whole thing is, it's really operatic. Mm. It's really great. It's really worth seeing, I think.
It's quite a moralistic film as well, though, isn't it? There's this feeling that evil in one person or bad in one person will drain down to the child, and there's no avoiding that.
I mean, I think that is at once the interesting part of it and the flawed part of it. I kind of didn't, but what I thought was great was the film, it was great right up until the moment that it had to tie it all up and show us the closure and show us the redemption and show us the moral. I thought when it was left untied, or even when you weren't quite sure what was happening with the second generation, what the connection was, when they just left it ambiguous, I was gobsmacked by that. I thought that was going to be so great and so daring and audacious. And unfortunately, it isn't quite as daring and audacious as all that.
Catherine, you interviewed Eva Mendes for the paper last week. Does she have much to do in this, other than look after Anthony Pizza, of course?
No, not a lot, because it's a film entirely preoccupied with paternal legacy. I mean, it's funny because she has these scenes with Gosling that are meant to kind of crackle because they're, you know, together in real life, and she doesn't really have many scenes with Cooper. So it's she's a bit kind of stranded in it. It's a strange film. And the way it's interesting the way they're sort of selling it, because they're selling it very much the return of Gosling, the turn of the sort of dry Vera Gosling, you know, rather than going with the Bradley Cooper angle, which is curious because, you know, Bradley Cooper is kind of last year's Ryan Gosling. You know, Gosling was sort of had this huge 2011 and then Cooper had this huge 2012 where they kind of emerged as serious stars. Yeah, it's interesting they're going so much with Gosling, and you think they must feel a bit annoyed that the amazing-looking trailer for Only God Forgives, which is the actual follow-up to Drive, was released this week, which kind of might have stolen a bit of the thunder. But no, I mean, it's certainly curious.
I mean, especially strange in a way that Gosling's just said that he's going to take a break from acting now, and we've seen too much of him, and these two big films are coming out.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say his performance is very different than Drive. I mean, if you want to see him repeat that kind of performance, you watch the trailer for Only God Forgives, where he returns to the super cool, ultra-violent kind of Avenger. This is a much more accessible and human performance from Ryan Gosling, which is why I frankly preferred it.
You want a house? I'll get you a house. You want to get the f*** out of here? Well, get out of here. I got that trailer. I'll get a truck. We'll hit the road. You pick a place you like, we'll stop. You don't want to be there. We're out of there.
The Place Beyond the Pines suggesting that crime doesn't pay, but it's okay. Your kids will pick up the tab. Let's move on to our next film, which has Tom Cruise as a janitor fixing everybody else's mess. And if that sounds really boring, hang on a second. He's fixing space robots. And the mess, that's the end of the world, also known as Oblivion.
Tower 49, this is Mission Control. How y'all doing this lovely morning?
This is Jack Harper. I'm good to go.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
New York 2077. Tom Cruise is Jack Harper, but while he's working, you can call him Tech 49. Tech's a maintenance man, keeping Earth's defense robots online so they can tackle an alien race known as the Scavs. Joseph Kosinski, director of Tron Legacy, is responsible for plonking the Crewster in this post-apocalyptic hellhole. Andrea Risborough and Olga Korolenko share in his misery.
Oh my God. We have an unidentified impact.
Drones are mobile. Keep your tech out of there.
They are human.
I'm ordering you to return to tower immediately.
They're firing on survivors.
Catherine, I thought this was a riot of sci-fi dross and nonsense, but I think you enjoyed it a bit more than me.
I did, yeah. I mean, I even like Night and Day, so I do like a cruise vehicle.
I don't think it's anything to do with Tom, though. I think Tom's really good at spouting rubbish.
He's great, especially in this. He's completely mesmeric. Even if you don't kind of fancy him anymore and he's talking complete rubbish, you can't take your eyes off him, which is an amazing thing. I think it's a pity that he's quite so kind of has to fill the whole screen and he can't have a co-star with whom he can kind of go toe-to-toe with. Nobody's star wattage is allowed to come anywhere near his own. And so the two female characters here are sort of blanded out to sort of horrible levels. I mean, Andrea Risborough, who plays his sort of first squeeze, and she's his sort of assistant. And it's an unbelievably thankless part. I mean, terrible part. And Olga Korolenko is sort of pretty, but that's kind of it. But I thought it was quite a lot of fun. I didn't find it boring. I had quite a good time.
Peter, the filmmakers were saying that they were going for a kind of 70s sci-fi vibe to this. Did you pick up on that?
No, not really. No, I didn't get it. But funnily enough, the 70s sci-fi vibe was one of the few things it didn't plagiarise, actually. Although I think the screenwriters of almost every single extant sci-fi film could unite in a massive class action plagiarism lawsuit against Oblivion, because I stopped counting the films that it was kind of ripping off. And it's okay to rip things off, it's okay to be influenced by it. But I just thought this was sort of outrageous in that it was doing so in quite such a soulless way.
I have been scrabbling around in my mind trying to find things that I like about it. And What I can say is that this is Tom's best Jack yet. He's played Jack now in three different
yes,
movies.
That's true.
He's getting very good at playing Jacks. That's what I'm yes. going to say that's nice about it.
Yes.
One
yes.
for the poster.
Yes, one for the poster there. I mean, I thought the interesting thing about who's big enough to go toe-to-toe with Tom Cruise, I think Morgan Freeman is...
But he's not allowed to be.
He's not allowed to be, and his role, which is a small role but important, is kind of sketched out. It's so cloudy. The one actor who I thought did something interesting, almost against the grain, was Andrea Riseborough, because she looked interesting. She had that kind of clenched, weird Stepford thing going on, and you knew from the word go that her relationship with Tom Cruise isn't authentic in the way that Olga's clearly is.
They weren't an effective team.
No, they weren't an effective team. She's uptight and weird, but... Andrea Riseborough always gives you something. She always finds something as an actor. And I think she did. She almost found it in spite of the script, to be honest with you.
It's difficult for her, though, because, I mean, even her kind of sexy dialogue, it's just a trait, isn't it, that she's in the pool and Tom says, oh, yeah. I'll show you downstairs on planet Earth one time. I've got something to show you. And she says... let me show you something.
Now, my big problem with that, and this is a tangent, but my big problem with that was that surely as the last two people on Earth, she's shown him everything.
Yeah.
She could ever show him. They've shown each other everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and maybe that was part of the point.
Well, I mean, that's part of the mysteries of married love, old boy.
Tell me, does she bring back old memories?
Where is she?
I've been watching you, Jack. They lied to you. It's time to learn the truth.
That's Oblivion, and 45 minutes in, I at least was praying for it. Anyway, let's move on to our next film, which is a documentary from Israel. It sees six of the former heads of the Israeli security agency Shabak quizzed by director Dror Morir. These men hold the key to the truth behind some of the most controversial covert operations in Israel's history since the Six-Day War. They are the Gatekeepers.
יחיא היה שהיה בכיר המחבלים שפעלו אי פעם נגד ישראל, בטח בכיר אנשי החמאס. האיש היה מהנדס, הוא ידע להקים מטעני חבלה מחומרי נפץ מולטרים.
The six former heads of Shin Bet, or Shabak, reveal as much as spies are going to in this documentary, which attempts to shine some light on the shady world of Israel's internal security agency. These men are bred to evade, revel in half-truths. Director Dror Morir is going to have his work cut out.
כל חייל של צה"ל הסתובב עם התמונה שלו. הוא היה מבוקש מספר אחד ללא עוררין.
Catherine, there's a lot of revealing detail about the dirty business of covert operations here, and it reminded me a little bit of Errol Morris's The Fog of War, which I think was quite influential in how the film actually got made. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's right. I think he pitched it as a fog of war for this situation, and indeed one of the gatekeepers had seen that film, loved it, and so agreed to do it, which is a really interesting sort of way in. And it is like that, and it is amazingly sort of exhilarating in a horrible way to have the lid lifted on something quite so incendiary as this in this way.
I think on the base level of documentary making, though, you've got to remember that these guys are people who've made their livelihoods through never revealing anything.
Absolutely.
And being absolutely secretive and being obscuring at every turn. And now he's got these guys on camera just speaking very plainly about things like the Bus 300 incident. These are things that haven't really been talked about from that top level of people.
No,
and we're seeing it for the first time.
Absolutely astonishing stuff. And that's where it differs from something like... I mean, one of the documentaries I've really loved over the past year was Joshua Oppenheimer's The Act of Killing, which does something similar with the people who kind of executed the kind of Cambodian death squads. They didn't authorise it, but they did it. Whereas they are, and they're completely frank in a very, very similar way, but of course it wasn't sort of so secret.
Peter, this was nominated for the Best Documentary Oscar, alongside Five Broken Cameras, which showed a very personal view of the Palestinian side of the story. Mm. But it didn't win, it lost to Searching for Sugar Man. Could you kind of explain why?
I think mainly because Searching for Sugar Man offered a much more emollient, easy, feel-good story. I had my problems with Searching for Sugar Man. I think it did that by... sort of not giving us all the facts, to be honest with you. But it was a very, very good film, and good luck to it. Movies like this, especially on hot-button issues like Israel, make people nervous. They really do. Even and on Palestine, that makes people nervous as well, however good people might secretly think it. And I think people are entitled to say, particularly with spooks and intelligence people and spies, thinking when they come out on camera and allegedly start telling you the truth, you've always got to have a pinch of salt, no matter how compelling it is. So when 5 or 6 top-ranking people in Shin Bet start telling you the truth, well, it's fascinating what they're doing, but don't take it on trust. You can never take it on trust. Well, you can never take anything completely on trust at face value. But with intelligence people who never retire, you can never take it at face value. That's not to say it's not fascinating and brilliant and very authentic and very worthwhile, but you can't take it at face value.
רצח רבין קטע את התקווה. הוא הראה בצורה הברורה ביותר שמתנקש קטן, מושתן, עם אקדח שבקושי יורה, יכול לקטוע תקווה שלמה, תהליך שלם, יכול לשנות כיוון.
That's the gatekeepers. And finally, let's shoulder our backpacks, grab a phrase book, and head for the gap year trail. We could head to Paris maybe, indulge in some blackmail, and then emotionally torture all our newfound friends. What kind of monster would do that? A monster like Simon Killer.
And what are you studying?
French literature.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, what period?
Middle Age and Renaissance.
Wow.
He might sound charming, but watch out for Simon. He's turning the Parisian dating scene into a twisted sociology experiment, one innocent conquest at a time. Brady Corbett plays our perverse little prince, while director Antonio Campos is behind the camera, urging him on to ever darker depths.
How the width of one object is given a weighted average of the objects around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called size pooling. Anyway, it's boring, I know. It was published, actually.
Wow. What are you doing in Paris?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Peter, this reminded me a little bit of a film out last year called The Woman in the Fifth.
And yes.
What is it about that Paris that turns the American male quite so nasty?
I know what you mean. The Woman in the Fifth wasn't as hardcore as this,
no.
Actually. I mean, there are lots of things that this has been influenced by. I think the resemblance to The Woman in the Fifth is kind of accidental, to be honest with you. I really like this. I thought this was a really gripping contemporary noir with maybe a little bit of Mr. Ripley in this kind of open, rather damaged, vulnerable guy in Paris who seems to be getting out of his depth and more into a violent situation. And you're invited to think, well, is he okay? Is he going to be okay? Or is it something that's pre-existing in his mind all the time? Are we just getting something which was always destined to happen? I really love this filmmaker's first movie, After School, which was a very American film, but obviously influenced by high European art house directors. I suspect that what Campos has seen is some of the movies by Gaspar Noé. I think certainly with the dark, disturbing, kind of I'm getting lost in Paris feel and the strobe in and strobe out kind of ways of linking scenes is very like Noé. I think it's great stuff. The Campos is such a talented filmmaker.
Catherine, this is part of a clutch of movies from a stable of filmmakers that includes producer Sean Durkin. He's the guy who wrote Martha, Marcy May, Marlene. He was also involved in films like Two Gates of Sleep, which again was very small, starred Brady Corbett. But it was very similarly kind of weird and out there, like modern Americana. And I think they're a really interesting group of people, particularly led by Corbett, who's managed to make it into things like Melancholia. Did you think that Corbett carried this film in the way that he needed to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an absolutely brilliant performance. And the thing is that although it is sort of hardcore and hard to watch, it's also, as Peter says, incredibly sort of strangely easy to. It's sort of mumblecore, no way. You know, it's really, it's kind of fun almost.
What I always thought was great about it is that usually within the first few frames, you can say, when you watch a film, you say, yeah, that's an American indie. Or you say, yeah, that's European art house. I couldn't tell this with this film. I thought it would really interestingly, it had fused the two sensibilities in a really interesting way.
It's interesting because in its unassuming way, it's real kind of evidence of a pan-global thing. And also, that's the case with Oblivion, of course. It's so completely divorced from reality, so completely divorced from any kind of political tension, that you can see how it's been machine-tooled for global consumption and even the casting is sort of ticking various boxes along the way. And the interesting thing, particularly about Oblivion in that way, is that it's coming up against Olympus Has Fallen, which is out next week, which shares huge amounts of plot, theme and even cast, and that's unbelievably specific geopolitically, whereas this week is the week of,
geographic mystique.
Exactly.
How long were you together?
For almost 5 years. I moved in with her right after graduation. Things were... well, they were nice for a while, but then she wasn't happy anymore. I wasn't making her happy. She didn't like what she was doing. I tried to be supportive, encourage her not to settle, but then... I'm living at home now. Excuse me, I'm not feeling so well. I'm still feeling jet lagged.
Simon Killer, alone and dangerous on the streets of Paris there, and we're going to end the show this week on that downbeat. My thanks very much to Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Short for joining me. Thanks to you for watching. But we're going to go off and raise our spirits now by riding the cage of death until the gas runs out. See you all next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.